Hello there, and a warm, if not very, very, very warm welcome to the latest edition of the DF Direct Q&A show. Yes, we're enduring a heat wave here, so yes, recording this under bright lights is just the ticket. Joining me for this particular show, it is Will Judd. Hello.
Hello. Good to be here. Looking forward to talking about the steam machine with somebody that actually owns a steam machine. Incredible.
Yes, and there it is, just over there. There we go. See it right there. Tiny little cube there. Awesome stuff. Let's just get straight onto it. Okay, so obviously the pricing of steam machine, I think it's been the biggest negative factor. I think we highlighted that in the review. And obviously the discourse surrounding the machine is basically defined by that price point. Man, we've got a lot of points to cover on this one. Let's just take this question from Marcus. Hi, I found him! The steam machine price has landed, and wow, the price debate has been had ad nauseum though, and that is not really what I wanted to ask about. Part of the value proposition seems to be form factor, integration, and library access. My dad is not a serious PC gamer, but I already have a large Steam library, so family sharing would give him an instant pool of games without needing to build a library from scratch. I could buy or build him a traditional gaming PC, but realistically, he does not want a tower, a Windows setup, or something that he feels like a hobby project. Yeah, fair point. The appeal of the Steam Machine is that it's a neat, whisper-quiet little cube of SteamOS that offers something much closer to a console-style experience while still giving access to the flexibility of PC gaming. So my question is, how should we think about the value of that kind of product if performance is broadly in line with similarly priced small PCs or DIY builds? Is it actually a strength that Valve is delivering something this compact, standardized, and console-like for roughly the same money? I hope you have a great week, point. This is an interesting question, isn't it, Will? Because fundamentally, the key criticism of the Steam Machine is the fact that it does start at $1,049, and you can build an equivalent machine, a more powerful machine, for the same price. However, pretty much all of those machines that I've seen are kind of like your standard PC towers or mini towers. Small form factor, even then, you're not dealing with like a six inch cubed little device like the Steam Machine over there. What do you make of this discussion about pricing?
I mean, yeah, I think it's obviously very unfortunate for anyone that was looking forward to it to suddenly have the prospect of a machine that is much, much more than we kind of expected and that Valve pitched as being a kind of console equivalent device. And yeah, I mean, I think that's just kind of the reality of the day, unfortunately. And I think, you know, PS5, Switch 2, Series X, and the upcoming consoles are all going to likely go up in price. Based on our projections, it seems like this kind of crisis is going to continue for a long time. So clearly Valve have baked in maybe, 3 months, 6 months of price increases into what it, what their cost price is for the Steam Machine. And they've come up with this, $1,049 price to kind of make sure they don't have to change it immediately. It's expensive. There's no way around it. But I think, I think Marcus and Marcus's dad are in a really good situation here in that they're going to benefit really well from the Steam Machine. It sounds like they don't need necessarily the most powerful PC that you could buy for the money. They need something that is, flexible, works easily, integrates easily into a living room, and it takes advantage of the fact that Marcus already has a big Steam library and there's a really good family sharing option. So, from that point of view, obviously you're paying more, but you are getting some stuff in return that you don't get from a standard PC build. And I think that's fairly reasonable. What do you think?
Well, it's a tricky one, right? Because there's been comparisons to PlayStation 5 and PS5 Pro. The PlayStation 5, from a GPU perspective, is a little bit more powerful. From a CPU perspective, it's less powerful. The PS5 Pro, obviously, that's still cheaper, but has a much better GPU, and the gap between the CPUs closes up a little bit. The issue with these comparisons with there's all manner of comparisons going on here, and the issue with them is that we're comparing apples to oranges. So let's consider, first of all, the PlayStation side of things. First of all, it's kind of borne out by Marcus's case here. if he bought his dad a PlayStation 5, he's not going to be able to play his PC games on it. So, you know, this is kind of like, you know, it's that sort of argument only applies to a specific person who doesn't have an existing library of games anywhere. So I don't understand. I mean, I think in terms of like building out a console comparison in terms of like the performance of the machine, the performance profile of the Steam machine to get an idea of what it can do, I think that's entirely valid. And that's what we did. But, you know, as I said in the review, you can't play your PC games on it. So it's kind of academic. It's more about, you know, getting the sort of laying the sort of expectation level of what we would have expected from that hardware. So, you know, console comparisons, valid to a certain extent, but not really borne out by the real world. Now you have the PC comparisons where, you know, we did it as well. You know, mm-hmm. It's kind of like, well, what kind of PC can you build for the same money? And the answer is pretty much the same thing, but you can put in an RX 9060 XT, which is a much more powerful proposition than the Steam machine. However, are we comparing like for like, when you're sort of dealing with tiny little box there and sort of mini tower PC? I don't think we are. That's kind of, you know, the whole point of the Steam machine, I think, was to kind of like move PC gaming into different spaces, specifically the living room, I guess, in this case. And those machines do not meet that criteria. They don't do that, really. Secondly, there's a lot of other little things in there. You know, the acoustics, just awesome. I mean, we are running a heat wave here. I was doing some FSR4 testing on Steam Machine yesterday, and it was still operating just fine, despite the fact that within my office, it was in excess of 30 degrees C. You know, if that was a PC, that would have been like, you know, fans at maximum warp. And even then, you know, maybe things would have the performance would have dropped a bit. But so are we comparing like for like there? Not really. And then you have kind of like building your mini ITX machine. I think that's a fair shout, right? Because you can build a living room PC, but at the same time, what's the warranty situation like? You know, there's a reason why pre-builts exist. And you kind of want to have a sort of backup of assurances that the thing is going to work and be sort of serviced if something goes wrong. And secondly, there's the concept that maybe you don't want to build a PC. Crazy thought, I know.
So one thing I've been thinking about is that, you know, even when you do make this mini ITX PC, and we spec'd out a few for the website, is that you're going to end up with something that's probably a little bit more expensive than the Steam machine when all is said and done. You've got to build it yourself, and you're getting something that's really unlikely to be as small as the Steam machine is. Like, even a small mini ITX PC is often, you know, in the 20 liter kind of range, and the Steam machine is what, like 4 liters? So there's a huge gulf in, you know, where you can stick that and how nice it looks and everything else, right? So I don't know. Obviously, you know, Valve are making it as easy as possible for people to go out and make their own mini ITX PCs and have the other way of doing it, right? So they're kind of leaving all the options open, which I respect. But obviously, having the Steam machine in such a nice form factor and with all the extra little features it has, like being able to control your TV, there is value for that. And I don't think it's unreasonable for people to say, you know what, that sounds good to me. Like, one point they've made a lot with the Steam machine is that it's so much more powerful than the Steam Deck, and people have gotten so much running on that and have had really good experiences with it. And I think we're going to see a similar situation where, you know, the Steam machine comes out and game developers start to target the device a little bit. We have the verified program to know where games are going to run well or not, and people are going to be able to get, you know, every last bit of performance out of the thing. So I think, you know, there's a strong argument to say, like, this is going to age relatively well.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it all depends what those new consoles do next year and how they're priced, I think, fundamentally. I think the core problem here, the core issue, is that basically Valve didn't want to sell this machine at this price point. I think that's the bottom line. They were looking for something else. And when I spoke to Valve, it was kind of like, well, you know, we saw you added like circa 40% price to the Steam Deck. And is it a similar margin? for Steam Machine, and they kind of indicated that broadly, yes, but, you know, Steam Machine has more memory than Steam Deck, et cetera, et cetera. If you apply the same multiple to the $1,049, you start at $750, which is still kind of like, you know, in excess of PlayStation 5 money, but kind of a bit more understandable at that point. You know, it sort of works. And then we found out, you know, that Valve simply don't have the sourcing capabilities to get the same kind of deals as Sony and Microsoft, etc. And so that's where we are. You know, basically they need to improve logistics, I think, in order to be able to secure those deals. But the promise has not been fulfilled, I guess, is the main problem here, which is kind of like, yes, we're going to bring a console style box, and it's built on affordable parts. You know, those AMD CPU and GPU they've got in there, they are essentially salvage parts from other products. And, you know, the promise was, yeah, we've put this together. The form factor's great. And, you know, pricing should be reasonable, I think, was that was the basic idea. But the pricing, for whatever reason, isn't reasonable. And we are where we are. Yeah, it's certainly a bit of a sad situation, really. But I guess we were kind of expecting it to happen when we saw the price increases on the Steam Deck. Because they were just crazy high, to the point where you looked at like an Asus ROG Ally X, the Xbox Ally X handheld, and it was like $50 more for so much more. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be interested to see if the you know, the likes of MSI, Asus, maybe you know, the people that assemble pre-builts like CyberPower come up with their own small form factor machines that kind of offer the extra performance with a similar. With a similar price point, possibly. I mean, the build that you put together for the website, I thought it was pretty good. Obviously, it's a bit bigger, but it still kind of fits the remit. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just really sad. Let's move on to this question from Anxiously Chrono-Triggered. Hey, DF crew, I struggle to understand who the target audience for the Steam Machine is, especially at this price. I admit it looks cool, but so does the Series X. SteamOS is amazing, but if the main aim is to have a nice piece of hardware that provides a good gaming experience in the living room, then the current consoles already do that. It could have been a great entry point into the... it could have been a great entry point into the PC world, and I admit I considered buying one on sale before the Ramageddon and storage apocalypse. But good prices and sales are just a couple more things AI has taken away from us. Cheers, exclamation point. I think, you know, basically, as we've already mentioned here, the problem here with that kind of comparison is it kind of suggests that you aren't playing games at the moment, therefore you don't have an existing library, therefore you have the choice to choose an ecosystem. Whereas, you know, basically, I think chances are you're probably already invested in one ecosystem. And you're going to need to be buying machines within that ecosystem, whether it's PlayStation, Xbox, or PC. So I think, you know, that's kind of like the target audience for the Steam Machine. It is the PC gamer who maybe just wants to be able to play fuss-free games within the living room. And I think that was the target audience. And I think maybe there was aspirations of expanding that audience by providing, you know, really good accessible hardware. I'm not sure what you think about that.
Yeah, I think I agree pretty much. I think Anxiously Chrono Triggered is in the same situation that a lot of people are in, where they thought, oh yeah, I've heard about the Steam Deck. I've tried a Steam Deck. That's really good. Valve can make some really nice hardware. And so I have belief that this will be good for the price. And it, you know, it looks reasonable and has these other advantages. And I'm sure Valve are also, you know, very upset and gutted that, you know, things have gotten so expensive. So, you know, I think that obviously takes away from the mainstream aspect that Valve were probably going to try and target for this. But it still doesn't mean that, you know, the Steam Machine is necessarily the only way forward. Like, it's a very good option if you want something that's very streamlined and works well. And, you know, they're making it easy to build your own if you want to do that instead. One more thing is, I guess, you know, Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo are all kind of insulated against price increases just because they operate on such scale and they have a lot more leverage when it comes to suppliers. Obviously, Valve is completely the other end of the scale. But we may see that when it comes time for the next generation consoles, that they're also going to be at these kind of ridiculous price points, and it just becomes the new normal. And maybe at that point, the Steam machine becomes a little bit more viable when people can say, ah, yeah, the PS6, well, it's £1,500 though, so maybe I'll go for that cut price Steam machine instead and get a similarly fluid experience. I mean, who knows, but yeah.
I mean, yeah, talking about, again, the console comparisons here, because anxiously Quadhoad figured he's bringing it up again, basically. The pricing doesn't really, again, it's apples to oranges, right? Because you're buying your PlayStation for $600 at this point, right? And however, you're basically locked into that specific store with no competition. You're also paying a monthly fee for multiplayer.
Yep.
So there's a lot going on in terms of cost throughout the whole ecosystem there that maybe isn't being factored into this at all, which I think is a bit disingenuous. I guess my question to you, Will, is like, I'm pretty sure that when Valve released the Steam Deck, right, I think the base model was like $399 for the 64 gig flash version. They must have been subsidizing that. They must have been basically taking a loss on the units sold. And I think if they were, and I think they've, in fact, they even mentioned that the pricing was painful for them from a certain perspective. Yeah. It was new for them. But, you know, from that point of view, there is a strong argument that Steam Deck was looking to expand the audience, you know, to bring PC gaming to different places. I'm not sure that applies to this, but what do you make of this statement that Valve put out about not subsidizing the Steam machine at all?
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like they could have maybe gone halfway and maybe just bundled the controller for no extra cost, something like that, because presumably that isn't as dependent on other on flash storage basically being expensive. So they could have done something to make it a bit more amenable, but I kind of get the point that they don't want to just undercut anyone else who potentially could be making mini PCs and kind of get an unfair advantage from that. I mean, I'm not sure if that's entirely, not truthful, but if that's the entire story. But I can kind of understand that if you get into the habit of subsidizing things, then you're kind of dependent on people definitely using SteamOS and definitely buying a lot of things from Steam. And it kind of sets maybe the wrong expectation for the future. So, I don't know. In the end, it didn't happen. So, yeah, not much really to say about that, I guess, other than the controller bundle thing could have been better. But I don't know. What do you think?
I think there is two sides to this, because the pricing is now dominating the discussion on this to the point where it is effectively detrimental to the product. That said, do Valve care? because they're going to sell all of them anyway. And they're not going to miss out on games being bought on Steam, because, you know, if somebody builds their own Steam machine and they're putting SteamOS on it, they're likely going to be buying their games on Steam. And even if they're just a PC gamer, they're likely to be buying their games on Steam. it was really interesting in the interview. There are a lot of things that we talked about, and you supplied a lot of the questions to that. But there was one that I put at the end, which was basically, you know, this situation isn't great. You know, are you still going to continue developing Steam Deck 2? Because, you know, this pricing situation isn't going to change in the foreseeable future. That's their read on it. And the response was basically, well, people still need to play games, and we're going to make the hardware that makes that possible. So, you know, they're still all in on this, despite all of this crazy stuff going on. Yeah, I just think that, you know, there was a very sort of specific balance for this product when it was put together in the initial stages. It was to create something more accessible. It was to create something cute and exciting. And I think they succeeded on that. And I think also there was a pricing part to it, which was to make it affordable. And that's the reason why you get that specific CPU and that specific GPU, which aren't, you know, they aren't great parts. Let's be clear. You know, they're kind of like just a touch above entry level, really, if we're looking at it. But, you know, taken as a product altogether with a decent price, it would have done really, really well. I mean, we are in a situation now where, yes, it's going to sell out, most likely because they can, you know, they're not able to make as many of them as they wanted to in the first place. But in terms of that target audience, I think it's now skewed from, you know, maybe expanding that audience just to kind of like doing something for the core who have to pay for the privilege. Okay, let's move on to the next question. This one comes from Steve Milne. Hey, Foundryman, exclamation point. Did Valve miss the mark by not using unified memory for the Steam Machine? They shipped with 24 gigabytes total memory, which thus is their total cost. However, only 8 gigabytes is addressable by the GPU. Seems like a big miss. Having the console-like flexibility of unified memory would have at least solved the 8 gigabyte GPU limitation and solved some performance issues without modifying the overall costs. Thoughts?
I have some thoughts. So okay. Basically, yeah, unified memory is really cool and it makes a lot of sense for certain applications, but you are kind of paying a price for it. Obviously, if it's soldered to the board, then the user can't upgrade it. Valve can't easily make changes to how much they're going to equip each machine with. And there's a trade-off in terms of your RAM wants to be really low latency. Your VRAM is kind of really high bandwidth. And you can only satisfy, you know, one of those things at a time with a unified memory, right? It kind of has to sit somewhere in the middle. Whereas if you have RAM, which can be all in on low latency, and VRAM, which can be all in high bandwidth, then there's potentially some performance implications there, right? So yes, they could have done it a bit differently, but clearly I think, you know, the core issue is that 8 gigabytes is just about enough. It's not ideal, but on this class of GPU, which is kind of, you know, we roughly think it's between the RX 6600 and the 7600, somewhere in that region. Yeah. 8 gigabyte is a limitation, but it's not a drastic limitation. And hopefully through the verified program, they can at least guarantee that most games will come out with, you know, specs and settings at a certain level that that isn't a problem.
I think there's a design issue here, which Stephen is perhaps overlooking, is the fact that to be able to use unified memory, you basically need to unify the CPU and the GPU as well.
Yeah.
Which isn't part of the design here. So, you know, when you've got that unified SoC, which would be, you know, the CPU, the GPU, the media encoders, everything sits on a single slice of silicon. And then you can have like a single unified memory interface that attaches to the memory, which would be in this case, I guess, GDDR6 or 7. The problem is that that would require spinning up an entirely new processor out of nowhere. So basically, then you're looking at hundreds of millions of dollars in development costs in creating a new APU from scratch. The only other alternative, I think, would have been for Valve to do some kind of variant on Strixhalo, which does that job.
Right, yeah.
Which has, you know, they could have maybe lopped off one of the chiplets for the CPU. You don't need 16 cores and 32 threads for a Steam Machine. Then you're left with the main GPU slice there, where maybe there would have been salvage parts for that as well. The issue there is that Strixhalo is, first of all, gigantically expensive. Secondly, you're getting performance in line with a PlayStation 5 when you're using Strixhalo, which is ultimately just a bit better than what the Steam Machine is already delivering.
Yeah,
you would have had the advantage of unified memory, of course, but that's you would have likely ended up with a much more expensive processor in the process there. When looking at what Valve has actually delivered here, it is, you know, essentially a lower end mobile based CPU cluster. Has been sort of factored into a GPU as well, but it is fundamentally a mobile CPU. And I think, you know, the GPU is kind of desktop class. It is Navi 33, the same as the RX 7600, but it has a lot in common with the 7600M, which also has the 28 compute units. So, yeah, I think it's basically a case that the fact that there is a separate CPU and GPU was done for cost reasons. And then because you've got a separate GPU, it can't share the same memory as the main CPU. So that's kind of like how things ended up there. I mean, I think it would have been awesome to do a Strix Halo box. And I think fundamentally, if people are looking for a small form factor PC that is sort of more powerful or as powerful as a PlayStation 5, that does have unified memory to overcome that issue, you're looking at a Strix Halo box. And a Strix Halo box is way, way more than $1,049. Interesting question nonetheless, but it kind of like suggests that Steam Machine shares design concepts in line with a standard console, but that's not really how it works. Okay, let's move on. I've got a question here from Matt GPT. Hello, gents. With a Steam controller now pushing back deliveries until 2027, is it realistic to expect Valve to ship anything in volume at the moment? The Deck and controller are impossible to get hold of. The machine and frame are delayed to an unknown date. And we have been waiting for Half-Life 3 for more than two decades. This seems to be a bit more of a problem than being directly triggered by the RAM / storage supply constraints. Enjoy the mini heatwave. I'm not enjoying it, It seems to be nice for every nation in which the DFT reside. Yeah, it's not great. Basic question here from Matt GPT. Can Valve ship anything at this point? And I think basically the answer is it's challenging, clearly.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously the RAM and SSD pricing situation doesn't help. The fact that there's inflation, the fact that there's, you know, tension on supply lines in general, you know, it's just a bit of a weird time to make or ship anything. They are going to be shipping the Steam Machine soon, I guess. So that proves that they can still do something. And obviously the Steam Deck, although it is now extremely expensive, we do expect that to eventually come back onto the market and be purchasable and whatnot. So clearly, you know, Valve as a company is functional. But I think the interesting thing about Valve is that they're kind of masters of their own destiny, in that both they have a huge amount of money and they have the luxury of being able to say, this is what I really want to do, and I'm happy to wait until it's done, until it's perfectly ready, and then we'll do whatever we want. They also have, you know, employees within Valve are kind of free to choose what teams and what projects they work on. So they're probably a little bit less pushed by an outside force to bring things to completion, which, you know, traditional companies typically do have somebody in that role, right? So there are some kind of structural things there, but I mean, nobody's having a good time shipping things at the moment. Everyone is, you know, thinking, okay, well, how do we make this cheaper? How do we, you know, get away with not shipping our new products yet? How do we wait until things cool off? So, you know, in one sense, yes, they haven't shipped that much, but at the same sense, everyone is dealing with the same challenges, and, you know, we're seeing a lot of things getting delayed right now. So I don't think it's a purely Valve problem.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just extremely tricky for them. I mean, the stories that they shared in the interviews about sourcing RAM sounds completely nightmarish, to be honest. And I mean, basically, it seems to be a sort of wild west in terms of logistics and procurement at the moment, which isn't great for them at all. I do wonder. I mean, we did discuss, one of the questions that you put down when we spoke to Valve was about sort of securing third party partnerships, you know, in getting these components. And maybe that is a route forward for them going forward. Yeah, certainly tricky though. Yeah, I think to sort of summarize on this one, I think obviously there's issues at Valve in terms of actually getting stuff out of the door at this point, and it certainly seems to be very, very tricky, and I'm not sure, based on the conversations we had with them, that it's going to get any easier for them anytime soon. I mean, there have been sort of comments from AMD that maybe things are going to ease up towards the tail end of next year and into 2028, but I didn't get any kind of indication from Valve that they feel the situation is going to change at all. But they did say that, you know, if it does change, they'll be rethinking pricing on Steam Machine, which I think is obviously a logical route forward there, especially if there are going to be new consoles coming out, which, you know, may be putting pressure on the Steam Machine price point. Maybe not, because they are existing in different markets, I guess. Yeah, but it's not great. Okay, let's move on. Got this question here from Michael Payne. Hi, Foundryman. Perhaps the most interesting part of the Steam Machine announcement was Valve outlining their plans to ship Steam OS for all AMD-based PCs with other graphics card support indicated potentially for the future. How realistic would it be to get native NVIDIA Linux support with a future Steam OS version? I think it's basically extremely realistic because they've said they're going to do it.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. Clearly, there are bigger players involved here. NVIDIA themselves obviously need to be quite active in this, and that's not always easy. Historically, their approach to Linux has been a little bit more hands-off than AMD, you could say. They have a closed-source driver, and they don't tend to make new drivers available on Linux as quickly. I know when Forza Horizon 6 came out, I was running a Linux PC on Cache OS with, I think it was a GTX 1660 or something inside. And that worked perfectly fine. But when Forza Horizon 6 came out and I wanted to play it, the driver wasn't available for days after. And I ended up just booting back into Windows to get that done eventually. So there is, I would say, some organizational inertia to overcome. NVIDIA is typically a little bit more keen on proprietary stuff, and that makes it difficult for people in the Linux community and for Valve to be able to implement things in a way that actually makes sense and avoids, you know, bugs, artifacts, difficulties, restrictions, etc. So if anyone can make it happen, obviously Valve is a really good candidate. I think NVIDIA are no doubt looking at the popularity of SteamOS and Linux in general, and perhaps that's enough to kind of force a bit of a rethink. But yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic. I think it would be lovely to have it happen, because this is one of the biggest stumbling blocks for Linux at the moment, is that, you know, people always say, you know, go with AMD, you'll have less problems, and that's kind of been borne out in my experience. But I guess we'll have to see exactly, you know, how successful Valve are in this attempt.
I agree. It would be lovely. It would be absolutely lovely. More seriously, I mean, here's the thing, right? One of my big takeaways of using the Steam Machine is that basically everything works, right? You've got a great interface that's very, very smooth, very, very nice to behold, great functionality that PC users would like. And if the functionality isn't there, then, you know, obviously you can sort of dip back into the Linux desktop and set things up there, then go back to that lovely interface and you're good to go. The stumbling block has been, from my perspective, in terms of like Linux adoption, has basically been that NVIDIA are at the forefront of, you know, doing some fantastic new things with graphics rendering, right? And, you know, path tracing, multi-frame generation, that sort of stuff, you know, really nice new features for people to enjoy. And if that support isn't there day one on all the new titles within Linux, within SteamOS, that's a problem. But it is fundamentally the, you know, one of the only reasons, from my perspective, why I wouldn't move across full time to SteamOS for a gaming box. And there's the small matter of the fact that they've got like gigantic market share, right? Which, you know, if you're not supporting the number one GPU supplier for the PC market, then, you know, obviously that's only going to, there's a sort of ceiling based on how far SteamOS can actually go. So SteamOS receiving proper NVIDIA support is going to be a game changer for SteamOS in terms of like expanding its reach and potentially causing more problems for Windows, although they're causing plenty of problems for themselves. And basically the amount of people who would then be tempted to either A, give it a try, or B, just move over full time to SteamOS, it suddenly, you know, is you know, almost an order of magnitude higher, the total addressable marketplace for SteamOS. And I think, you know, that's a logical route forward. And I also think that NVIDIA are probably quite aware of the dissatisfaction with Windows generally, and seeing the way the wind is blowing. I mean, you know, at the moment, Linux has got like a paltry market share in terms of, you know, even the Steam hardware survey is saying it's like, what, 3-4%?
Yeah.
And a key reason of that is probably going to be that the most gaming GPUs out there don't properly support SteamOS. So, you know, it's a logical move for everybody involved, really. So I'm really excited by this. I think it could be really cool. I mean, you can run Bazite now with NVIDIA GPUs, right? But I think there might, you know, I haven't tried it myself, but I understand that there are some roadblocks there. But, you know, a properly invested Valve, a properly invested NVIDIA to make this work, I think it would be absolutely awesome, right? I think it's the number one sort of route forward for you know, taking SteamOS to the next level. You know, expand it out, not just to NVIDIA, but to Intel as well. Everybody could get a really good SteamOS experience. Yeah, that's my thoughts on that. Okay. Let's move on to the final question. This one from Darjarko in brackets, Dan. I don't know about everyone else, but I feel like the biggest letdown with the Steam Machine is not the absurd price or the absence of Gabe's cubified face on the front. That's the stuff of nightmares. Can you imagine? Yeah,
jeez.
Oh my God. Where's the lunchbox handle? What's the chance that Valve realized the errors of their ways and add it as an optional extra or a hardware revision? Yeah, I mean, he's alluding to the GameCube here, and this is the GameCube, and I did do a comparison, right? It's in the video. You did an article about it on the website where you put the GameCube side by side with the GameCube, and you realize that, man, this is actually a really, really cool little device. Just, you know, I think your headlines summed it up entirely. It's just like tiny cubes are cool, right?
Yep.
But does it need a handle? Probably not.
Yeah, I feel like the benefit of the handle is that when you're bringing your GameCube to your friend's house, you can kind of carry it like this and go, "Hey guys, I'm here. I got the GameCube." And I'm not sure the Steam Machine is really intended to be used in the same way. But having said that, we've seen Valve release a lot of, you know, 3D files, project files, stuff that you can use to be able to print out your own accessories, right? I know for the plate, like on the front, that's definitely something that they've released files for or will be doing soon. So maybe they're going to go a little bit further, release files for the entire enclosure. And in that case, you could just take out the internals and then have your 3D printed alternative with handle. And then, you know, jobs are good. So Valve, make it happen.
That's what it needs. It needs a handle. I think I think more generally, you know, it's just, again, just sort of going back to the feedback. And I can kind of understand it, right? Because form factor is quite, you know, in theory, it should be a really easy thing to express to the audience, right? Here's this cool little cube. But actually, it's quite difficult to actually sort of say, well, okay, you know, this machine, it's very, very cute. It's very, very tiny. It's got extremely, you know, it's extremely appealing. And instead, the focus is elsewhere on performance when it was, you know, the thing is about the performance side of things, we all knew what the performance would be pretty much from when the specs came out because it's existing Radeon and Ryzen parts. So we had a kind of idea of what to expect. Hardware set in stone, the price is the price. And I guess from their perspective, it's going to sell out anyway. Just probably wasn't this sort of massively successful thing that we kind of hoped it would be. You know, the sort of aura of a Valve product. There's sort of maybe been a bit of a, it's not quite the same as it was before. Anyway. That is our Q&A on the Steam Machine. Lots more to come on the Steam Machine. I'm currently looking at FSR4 running on the Steam Machine, which is throwing up some very, very interesting results. In fact, I'm just going to give you a teaser clip here. This is Cyberpunk 2077 running on Steam Machine, and it is the PlayStation 5 performance mode settings. And it's FSR4 running at 1620p resolution, but it's dynamic resolution scaling. It can go down to like minimum 50%, and it looks really, really cool. It actually runs very, very smoothly at 60 frames per second. That's just part of some of the stuff that I'm doing at the moment with FSR4 on Steam Machine and more generally with FSR. But that's it. That's our Q&A show for this week. So please do like, subscribe, share, all of that kind of stuff. Ring bells for notifications for you, potential algorithmic boosts for us, and DF supporter program, patreon.com/digitalfoundry. Join us, join our amazing community, high quality video downloads of everything we do. And lots of other stuff there. Ad-free website, ad-free video downloads, access to the team, all manner of great stuff, updates on the team. But that's all from us on this one. Thanks for watching and supporting Digital Foundry, and we'll see you soon.